and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Greetings, Benjamin.
Greetings, Trevor. How are you?
Yeah, all right. As we're recording this on Sunday afternoon this week, I'm a little bit tired because I lost a bloody hour, didn't I?
Well, it wasn't just you personally. I think the whole country lost a bloody hour.
Can we just not mess with the clocks? It's fine in the autumn, you know, when you fall back an hour, because then you get the extra hour. But can we just leave it as it is all year round? Do we have to be faffing about the clocks?
I'm against you on that one.
Why?
I like the fact it'll be slightly lighter later.
But I mean, you'd get that eventually.
I know, but this sort of encourages it, because I am sick to death of the ridiculous disparity of the fucking sunshine in this country. You can go from some times of the year, it's still just about clinging on to a nice daylight at like 9:30 at night, and then other times of the year, 4 p.m. pitch black.
Yeah, it's dark in the mornings, though, isn't it? It's dark in the mornings.
No, it's too big a shift. 5.5 hours is too big.
Can we maybe go to the, like in the Second World War, Churchill moved the clocks forward 2 hours.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the idea was to have more productivity during daylight hours. There's an MP recently said that we should go back to that.
Really?
To putting it... Yes. She said, let's go back to... It would save money on your electricity bills. She reckons it would save £485 million in yearly electricity bills.
Well, that's something. That's not a terrible idea. Although, why is it we do it? Am I right in thinking it's to appease the farmers?
Well, it goes back to the First World War, actually. That was the first time clocks changed in, I think it was 1916. It was a way to save energy resources during lighter evenings. So it wasn't really to do with the farmers. It was just to... help everyone out during the war.
Well, I was going to say, because if it is for the farmers, then, you know, people have worked out how to grow exotic plants in their home, you know, where there's no sunlight. You know, people, homegrown cannabis, can make that quite easily.
Yeah.
So surely with the, you know, we're in 2025, modern technology, AI, surely the farmers can work out how to grow crops all year round without the help of the sun.
Well, I think you're over-egging to put it a little bit there. I mean, if you've got large acreage outside, you sort of do have to rely on the seasons for your crops, don't you? Obviously, in time, I suspect things will change. I know there are labs now that are growing things in different ways, you know. It's not that far off until we're going to have lab-grown meat.
I don't like the idea of that.
Well, I think it'll be a good thing. You won't have to be slaughtering animals, will you? That'll be a good thing. That'll placate Petter, won't it?
Yes, nothing else to do.
Will they? What will Petter do?
But surely we can conquer a bit of corn or some carrots. Surely that we don't need to mess up the sun for everyone else throughout the year. Mind you, you've said it isn't for the farmers.
No, so I mean you've gone down this road of having a pop at the farm. What is it you've got against farmers? Consider you live out in the country, Ben. Considering when I drive to your house, you pass many a farm on the way. You know, these are your neighbours. What is it you've got against the humble farmer?
Nothing. I think in general, I've got no problem with them at all. I just have been under the incorrect assumption for about 37 years that they were responsible for my being miserable at 4 p.m. in the winter.
No, it's got nothing to do with the farmers, mate.
Well,
nothing.
Then
leave the farmers alone.
I formally apologise to the farming community. Jesus Christ. And Jeremy Clarkson and his mob after me next.
The other thing that they said was, obviously, if you move it forward 2 hours, it will be a lot darker for a lot longer in the morning. You might not get daylight till about 10 o'clock in the morning. So the argument against it is it would increase accidents in the morning.
Why wouldn't it? Hang on a minute. But why aren't they worried about accidents at night?
Well, I did wonder
the
that
the other
myself.
Way around.
I did wonder, is it just in the morning people are just shittier at driving? So they're a bit tired. They're not really paying full attention. But you can't really have kids going to school in darkness, can you?
Why?
Well, because it's not right, is it?
Well, you and me, we had to get up at 3 in the pissing morning when we were on the radio.
Yeah, but we weren't
school
children.
No one gave a shit about us.
We weren't school children, were we? We were fully grown adults, or some would argue we were fully grown adults.
What's the difference? Why can't school children go to school when it's dark?
Well, because it's more dangerous, isn't it, for young children to be out and about in darkness.
Why?
Well, because they might run out in the road. They're not streetwise, are they, children, necessarily?
But when it's dark, that's when cars are at their most illuminated.
Yes.
They have lights on them and everything.
Children do children things, don't they? They don't pay attention.
Well, selection of the fittest. If you're that stupid that you run in front of a car that's lit up like a beacon, right, then I think you deserve to get squished.
Yeah. That's it, five-year-olds. Get your fucking acts together. Christ's sake, what's wrong
with
you?
Pull your fingers out.
Jesus Christ, bloody babies. Babies need to get some intelligence, don't they? That's the problem. They don't think for themselves.
I think that the school kids should be going in the dark and survival of the fittest. If they get into trouble, then that's their own fault. And also, to ease congestion, here's a good government idea. Why don't we suggest that year sevens come in at 8 a.m., year eights come in at 20 past 8, and do it in 20-minute increments. And then the later you start, the later you finish. And that'll ease the mad rush to try and get everyone through the door at 9 a.m.
Yeah. I mean, some schools sort of do that in terms of different year groups or key stages, don't they? They have different start and end times. But I don't know how well that would go down. But I mean, I like your idea. You're coming up with solutions to put forward, and that's all you can do. I mean, you are sounding, I think the more we go on with this, you're becoming slightly more fascistic at times in your thinking. But that's fine. The world's becoming more like that, and maybe you're just conforming.
And when the early starters finish earlier than the late starters, they can go and help the farmers out because they need all hands on deck before it starts getting dark, because apparently they can't deal with, you know, lights.
Again, it's got nothing to do with the farmers. I mean, I don't know how many times I need to say it. What is, again, this prejudice against the farmers?
I just don't understand why we haven't worked out how to grow crops without the sun.
What do you mean? Think of the investment that would be needed to have inside masses of acreage inside with illuminated fluorescence or whatever you need to give the power of the sun. Just think of the investment that's going to cost.
It's a one-off cost to install all the gear. Then, you know, running it might be a bit pricey, but...
Yes, and it's not going to be good for the planet. Think if you're burning electricity at that rate to... Yeah, think of the croppage that has to be grown.
I've never grown a cannabis plant before in my house.
Why is it you've gone straight to cannabis again?
I mean, well, because I've seen some people with pretty elaborate cannabis home setups, which look very, dare I say, impressive that they've managed to cultivate this little illegal farm. But surely on an industrial scale, it's just scaling it up. We could do that.
Again, I just don't think you're thinking of the actual cost of this. I mean, think of how much crop has to be grown just in this country alone, let alone around the world, and you're saying, well, we can do without the sun.
So okay, just going back to this
and
thing,
also like the crops are still getting the this is, I think, where you're getting confused, because the crops are still getting the same amount of sunshine. It's not like we're depriving the crops of any sunshine by changing the clocks.
This is very true. I hadn't even considered that.
You know, so the whole argument is null and void. The crops are still getting the sunshine they need. Nature may decide some years it doesn't give it the sunshine that it needs, and therefore the crops fail. And that's bad for the farmers. It's bad for us as consumers, because then the prices go up. It's a fucking nightmare, Ben.
Okay, so we've established it isn't the fault of the farmers. Mm. So why are we still, in 2025, invoking this stupid practice? For you said it came about from World War One or World War Two.
Yeah, in World War Two, it then changed to go forward 2 hours in the summer and one back in the autumn. Then at the end of the war, that changed, and it's just stayed the same ever since.
But World War One was about 85 years ago. World War Two, 1939. So we're about 85 years, 86 years ago.
Well, so, the 80th anniversary of VE Day is just a month or so away now, Ben.
So why are we still doing this?
Well, it's just become the norm, isn't it? It's just become the norm.
Everyone, well, it's normal that I have to be miserable. I get to get up for work when it's dark and go home at 4 p.m. when it's dark. And I don't get to enjoy a moment's sunshine. Every drop of sunshine I get, I'm working through it.
So what would you prefer then? To always be an hour ahead of GMT? So would you like to be in GMT or BST? Which one would you want to settle on?
Well, I don't really know the intricate difference. I just want it to be...
Well, we're in British summertime now. When you go forward an hour, that puts you into British summertime.
I want it to be constantly adjusted so that... And I'll even lose the really late finishes, the 9:30 p.m. As lovely as they are, I'll lose them. The rule is, from now on, sunset is 8 p.m. That's fair.
But then you're going to have to be adjusting the clocks every day to make... if you want sunset to be at 8 p.m. every day you're going to have to... And it won't be as simple, like, oh, move it forward an hour. You know, you'd have to move it like 2 minutes a day or something. I mean, imagine the fucking nightmare that you're causing with this policy.
I woke up this morning, Sunday the 30th of March, and my iPhone had already corrected the time for me. This can be done easily by boffins who work at Apple. They can adjust our phones every night. They can tinker with them. You're not even going to notice a couple of minutes here and there every night. You'll never see it, but you will always know I've got daylight and sunset is 8 p.m.
I mean, this sounds like some sort of dystopian fucking nightmare.
We'll call it BHT, Ben Harmer time, and people will love me. And the farmers will hoist me above their heads and march me down the street like their champion.
There'll be statues of you. You'll have your own TV show. You have your own TV show every night where you come on at 8 o'clock and say, I now declare the sun to be set.
Yeah.
Like some fucking mad dictator.
There'll be halogen lights over every farm in the land. Yeah. Everyone
cannabis will be grown.
And everyone will go to bed when I tell them to.
So aside from the change of time, how's your week been?
I've had a lovely week. I've had a week off work, which was very nice.
You went on holiday to see the ducks.
I did. Had a lovely time feeding the ducks. That was good fun. Not too bad. How was your week?
It's been all right. It's been a hectic old week and a bit of a sad old week, if I'm honest.
Okay. Oh, dear. Why? What's happened?
Well, I had to finally say goodbye to my car.
Oh, right. Okay.
My lovely little car had to go.
You are a bit, you're a bit clingy, aren't you? With not just with cars. I mean, sort of with everything. Like, I imagine you probably, if I was to refer to a news article from a magazine you might have bought 30 years, I imagine you would probably shuffle off into the back room and dig through a pile of papers until you found the article and were able to come and bring it to me.
Somewhere.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
What I was surprised about was how sad I was to see the car. Now, just to put it in context, the car has emotional attachment because it was my dear old granddad's car and I bought it off him years ago and I've had it 15 years. And so there was that attachment to it, that it was my granddad's car. He's no longer here. So, you know, there's a sort of attachment there. The interesting thing about it is I'm not, I'm not one of these people that sort of loves cars. You know, I don't look at a car. You know, like some people look at a car, it's like, oh, look at that. Look at that, lovely car. Oh. No. I'm not like that. I'm not bothered about the cosmetics of a car, really. I'm not bothered about what the engine sounds like. As long as it sounds sort of like normal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. My neighbour's son has got to, what's it? Is it a Bugatti, right?
Really? In Croydon?
Well, he doesn't live here. He comes to visit my neighbour.
Christ, I was going to say, that's a risk.
And
Bugattis are like, well, I mean, I'm no fucking car expert, but aren't they hundreds of thousands of pounds?
I think they are very expensive cars. And during lockdown, he did live with the neighbour because she's getting elderly now. And what was interesting was the number of people that would stop him and talk to him about his car. And I have got to know the sound of the engine. I do know when I hear it, oh, that's a Bugatti, but that's only because it does have a very particular sound. But the number of people that stop and talk to him about his car, and I just find that something that I've never got into. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you know, at least it's a healthy thing to be interested in, but I've just never understood it. I've never understood that sort of love for a machine, really.
Well, it was only a few podcasts ago that I was talking to you about possibly the most boring man on the planet, who I used to have the displeasure of having to work with, who would sit bolt upright and identify the passing traffic by the engine noises. So be careful that you've gone down the road of starting to identify cars by engine noise.
Well, the one. It's just the one.
Well, yeah. I mean, every journey starts with a step, and you've now taken that step, so be careful.
There's one other that I can recognise, and it's generally on a Friday and Saturday night. I think it happens on the main road, which is just off of my road where I live. I've never witnessed this in person, but I hear it. It sounds like people are having some sort of drag race So I identify as that as the wanker engine.
Because I mean, they could have just done over a bank in where you live.
No, it's so regular.
Oh, right.
It's
okay.
So regular, and you hear the tyres squeal. It's like two of them are revving up against each other, and they must have a race up the main street. That's all I can imagine that goes on. It's so regular. Every Friday and Saturday night, I hear it about midnight, between 12 and 1. You hear it. And you think, who are you fucking morons? And like, so I can identify that engine as just the wanker engine. You know, that's the...
I wouldn't want to say anything that might get you killed, but wouldn't you be half tempted to sort of sneak out to where you think this is taking place? Get your phone out, film them, get the reg plates, send that footage to the police, and then wait for them all to get done.
I'm in bed by 11, mate. I'm not getting up to go and have a look at it. I just lay in bed getting angry about it. That's all.
Fair enough. That's what you do. You see, yeah. you actively do nothing and just sit there seething.
Yeah.
I got so annoyed once. I saw some dickhead in East Grinstead doing an extremely fast donut round a mini roundabout.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wish I'd been able to get my phone out and film that quickly enough. But he was gone before I could even
film
get my hand
wheel,
in my pocket.
Yeah. Just as irresponsible.
Oh, God, I got cross. But yeah, but also snitches get stitches and all that. So, but it's tempting to stitch these little wankers up because you know they're going to keep doing it otherwise.
Yeah. If I've ever been out late at night and I'm walking home from the station, there's a speed camera sort of midway point between the station and my house. And occasionally, as I've walked home, there might be a motorbike or a boy racer or a joyrider, one of those sort of Asbo types that are out and about late at night. And they don't know the camera's there. So then we speed it up and suddenly there's the flash of the camera. And I must admit, there's a bit of me, well, there's quite a lot of me that goes, good. Fucking marvellous.
Now, I've mentioned Jeremy Clarkson once already, but I don't want to become like a motoring podcast, but...
I think we're in any danger of that with the knowledge of motoring that we have between us.
I was once on my way to your house. Well, you know, referred to it earlier on, picking you up at God o'clock in the morning for our radio job.
Yeah.
And I once accidentally ran a red light. Oh. And also, I think I might have been speeding as well.
Right.
And the camera flashed. And I thought, oh, shit, that's probably going to be a fine and points on my license.
Yes.
And then I learned that only about 25% of speed cameras actually, they'll all flash at you, right. But only about 25% of them will actually work or do anything about it.
Oh, so they're just deterrents.
Yeah, apparently it's just too expensive for them all to actually be functional. They'll all flash and stuff, but only like 75% of them will do nothing. But what I hated the most, I'd almost think, right, you know what, fine, you've called me, just give me the points, give me the fee. This psychological torment of this sort of 21-day period you've got to sit through, looking at the letterbox, thinking, is it coming today? Is it coming today? And then you finally think, oh, about 3 weeks, I'm off the hook. I obviously didn't get caught. But the psychological warfare of that, I'd rather have the fine.
Well, then, but that's the punishment. That's the punishment. You don't get fined, but your punishment is 2 weeks of worrying about it. And it's certainly 2 weeks where you're never going to do that thing again. At least 2 weeks, if ever. You know, you would have been deterred. So you could say it works.
Yeah, although I was so tired picking you up at those. I'd often stop for green lights.
Well, I was going to say, it's amazing that you jumped a red light because you'd normally stop at greens. I mean,
and you were always very sweet about it. You'd give me a little nudge and say, Ben, it's great. Yeah. Green, mate, green.
Yeah. Well, I didn't feel the need to be sort of yelling.
You were too tired to raise your voice, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was a ridiculous time in the morning. But, I mean, it's weird at that time in the morning because we used to see some fucking lunatics out and about on the road at that time. It's almost like a lot of people think that between probably the hours of about midnight and 5, the rules don't apply. Just do what the fuck you like. Because we used to be on the road about 4 o'clock, and particularly going through Brixton, Streatham and Brixton in particular, like it was just fucking bedlam.
It was like Mario Kart sometimes.
Yes. Unbelievable. Just people ducking and diving, speeding, just not following any of the rules of the road. It was just one of the most extraordinary things. But I will miss running the gauntlet of driving at certain times of the day because, you know, it sort of keeps your wits about you. But it was a sad thing seeing the car being taken away. The end of an era.
I can imagine it was, and I was only teasing you earlier on because I actually do know a little bit about this because one of my family members inherited a car from my granddad before he passed. And I know that when they had to get rid of it because it was such an old car and it had just, you know, gone past its best and it was time to reach the old scrap heap, that they were very emotional about having to give it up because it is almost like giving up a bit of the memory of that person who gave it to you. But I noticed, I mean, I didn't get offered the car. Someone else did, but fine. But no, I completely get the sentimentality of it.
But are you sentimental about objects?
I can be. I think you have a propensity to do this more than I do, but you're a bit of a hoarder at the best of times.
Yes.
There are some things I'll find it hard to let go of, but not too bad. I'm quite, especially since we've moved to East Grinstead. And once you've gone through the moving house process and you realise the amount of shit you've got that you can do without, you don't need, I've become a lot more cutthroat about just saying, right, I haven't touched that in 6 months. It's going to the bin.
I mean, I find though that it's the memories that are wrapped up in certain things. I was going through one of the cupboards. You know, like you do every couple of years or whatever, you go through a cupboard. And there's the stuff that you didn't throw out the last time you went through it. And I had a box full of lots of T-shirts, all Arsenal-related T-shirts from when I was a kid. I can't get rid of those. I'm never going to wear them ever again, but I can't get rid of them. The memories of going to the matches when I was a kid, or just the fact that I bought the T-shirt to commemorate winning something and what that evokes in me. So I'm very emotionally attached to all of these T-shirts.
Well, that's okay. I mean, is there no way you could sort of display them or like keep them in like a neat sort of display or something?
I did think one day about getting a couple of them framed. You know, like people do get shirts framed.
Yeah.
But often they're sort of shirts that have been signed or, you know, these are generally very cheap T-shirts that you bought outside the stadium on those dodgy market stalls.
Oh, the knockoff shit, right. Yeah,
I get you. I mean, some of them aren't. You know, I've got the kits, you know, the Arsenal kits I used to have when I was a kid. I've still got those, you know. Again, I'm not getting rid of those, especially the first one I ever had. And the kit we had when we won the league in 1989, you know, that's never going, never getting
but
rid of
before,
that.
But before the listeners think you're being a little, you know, lovely and sentimental, you are the same man who goes through other cupboards and has trophy tinned fish that you won't throw away.
Well, that's right, yes.
This doesn't just apply to actually sentimental stuff. This applies to a tin of fish.
Well, I did recently go through the food cupboards. I couldn't find that tin of fish. I did wonder if I threw it out last time round because I couldn't find it. I recently went through the cupboards. There was a couple of very old tins of soup that had seemingly solidified because when you shook them, there was no liquidy sound. So they're gone. I haven't kept those.
I sincerely doubt you threw away that tin of fish because you'd remember, because you'd have probably lit a candle, sung a hymn, and had some sort of service for it.
I can't find it, though. Somewhere, I mean, if it's in the house somewhere, there's a very old tin of fish somewhere.
Is it buried under the Arsenal memorabilia?
Those things have never been together. There's no way those things would ever be together. But maybe the fish will turn up one day. I sort of hope it will because, I think as well I spoke about that fish, it's a very old tin of fish and sort of there's historic reasons to keep it now.
Well, you've told me before that your mum occasionally pops around and, you know, I think personally, I think she's making excuses to come and throw things away when you're not looking.
Well, I think probably you're right, yeah.
Like a sort of welfare check.
I mean, there are other things that I'm emotionally attached to. Again, I was cleaning out some cupboards the other day and I came across a mug that was the mug that I had as a child at my aunt and uncle's house. And it's got a dragon on it. It's still usable. It's a bit chipped and cracked. And I thought, no, I'm not... Some people just throw that out, to just get rid of that mug. But to me, there's lots of memories attached to that mug.
That is something I do share with you. Every year for mine and Mrs. Ben's birthday, we get each other a new mug. And I would hold those very sentimentally to me because they're always thoughtful mugs. They're often daft, but, you know, you got it on your birthday from your other half and it's sweet and there's thought in it and it means a little something. It's not just some old mug. It's something a bit personal. This year's, by the way, in case you're interested, Alexander Usyk on a mug.
Oh, is he a boxer, is he?
He is a boxer.
Right.
Yes.
So you got him on a mug?
I've got him on a mug with his catchphrase, I am Phil.
What a catchphrase.
Yeah. Well, English isn't his first language. He's Ukrainian. And he's a lot better now, but in the early days of being interviewed by the British press and journalists, they would ask him how he felt and he would say, I am Phil.
Right.
So that's where that came from. So I mean, I have an Alexander Usyk mug that says, I am Phil.
I mean, fair play to anyone who conducts an interview, because it happens all the time with sports people in English when it's not their first language. But when that becomes your catchphrase, that's going to go on mugs and things, I would hope someone would say to him, that doesn't make any sense, mate.
There's another example of this with another boxer from China called Zhile Zhang. His nickname is Big Bang Zhang. And I still to this day don't know if anyone's told him, but he keeps going up to other boxing opponents, or other men, and telling them how hard he's going to bang them. And I think there's a slight translation issue.
Yeah. Again, somebody should tell him that, because that's the sort of thing that will get him punched. I mean, he's a boxer, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, that's the sort of thing that somebody should say. You might want to just rephrase that in a different way.
Yeah. Two meanings for that one, Zhile. might want to think on.
The other thing I'm also very sentimental about is... If I've gone on a big holiday, like I've done a couple of big holidays in my life, New Zealand for a month, the United States for a month, you know, it's a big thing to do, right?
Expensive too.
God, yes. New Zealand, not so bad, because I stayed with a friend and I had no money really to do anything, but I didn't care then. I'm just in New Zealand for a month. It was great. America, I spent so much money, but I didn't really care. It was like, this is once in a lifetime opportunity to go and see the space shuttle launch.
Didn't you also have an unexpected extended stay because the launch was delayed?
Well, yes. But a few days before I left, the launch date was put back, so I extended my stay by a week.
That must have been a nightmare. That must have been reorganising flights, accommodation, everything.
It wasn't too bad because I'd not sorted out all my accommodation, because I was sort of doing that as I was travelling around the States. But yes, I had to change my flight. But it wasn't too bad. I mean, it cost me money, but I was at the point where it was like, I've spent so much already.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
I'm not coming home without seeing that fucking shuttle go. I mean, even on the day of the launch, having waited a month for it, I think it was 5 o'clock that I had to leave. I was being picked up from my motel to go to view the launch. It may have even been earlier than that. But I was so excited all night, I had NASA TV on in my motel room.
Didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, yes. And about, I don't know what time it was, about 4 o'clock, it was a no-go. I mean, they were saying the weather's looking good for later, but at the moment it's no go. And I'm sitting in my motel at sort of, you know, 4 in the morning thinking, now if it's no go, I wonder when they'll reschedule it to. I don't know if I can afford to stay any longer, but I was trying to work out how this might happen or if I'd have to go home and fly back at some point, because the shuttle didn't have many launches left at that time. I was going to see it towards the end of its life. And that was a scary thing. I thought, I'm seeing this fucking thing go. Anyway, it went. It was fine. I went and saw it.
Did you get yourself any sort of memorabilia for that trip? That would be something really sentimental to never throw away.
I got a mug for the mission. I think I got a coin for the mission.
Yeah. Nice.
I got a couple of bits of memorabilia from that. So yeah.
That's proper stuff that's worth keeping.
I've also got in a folder all of my tickets, all of my paperwork I'd printed off before I went.
No.
I got even little bits I'd picked up, like little leaflets I picked up at places as I walked around. I've got all of that in a folder, and I can't get rid of that stuff because that reminds me all of that trip, doesn't it?
No, you see, what you've done there is you've identified what is good, like the coin, the mug, that stuff, fine.
Yeah.
The booking confirmation, that can go in the bin, my friend. No, how long ago was this trip?
It's 15 years ago now. But, you know, the plane, the boarding pass, got that still, you know, because that's all part of the excitement, isn't it? That's all part of the history of the journey.
But it's just in a box somewhere, isn't it?
It's in a folder in a drawer.
Right.
But occasionally I'll dig it out and have a look. So I also got a little booklet. I kept a journal on the holiday. So occasionally I'll get it out and I'll read the journal.
That's lovely. Keep the journal. Throw away the map to how to get to the airport. We don't need that.
Well, you see, but these are the sort of things that I'm attached to that I find, if you throw them out, you're sort of throwing out part of the memory in my mind.
Which brings us back to your granddad's car. So Did you sell it? Did you scrap it? What happened?
I didn't want to know what's happening to it. I sold it to a company who will either sell it or scrap it, depending on whether they feel they can sell it or not. I don't want to know what's happened to it. I don't want to know it's been scrapped. I know the reality is it probably will be, but I don't want to know that.
Was it one of those we buy any car type jobs?
Well, it wasn't them, because they seemed far more complicated than their advert suggests. it was another organisation that I used. Yeah, but it was fine. But I didn't want to know what's going to happen to it. I don't want to think of it being scrapped. I know it probably will be. But on the other hand, I sort of think, well, maybe they'll find, because it was still a nice little runner. Didn't have many miles on the clock. Only considering it was 26 years old, this car. It's 74,000 on the clock. You know, it was still pretty good.
It's not bad.
And you sort of feel like it might do someone a turn. Might do a little old lady a little turn. Might do, the only thing is it would have to be outside of the ULEZ zone. That was part of the reason it became unviable for me to keep it, because every time I wanted to use it, it was costing me money. So Sadiq Khan's won, basically. Well done. Well done, Sadiq. You've won.
Now, did you get the money back when you sold it on from this company? Did you get the money back that you'd paid your granddad? Were you a loss still, or
I was never going to get the money back that I paid my granddad for it. But to be honest, considering 15 years I've had it, it wasn't that much of a loss, really, overall.
Not bad at all.
And I got some tax back, obviously. You get your bit of road tax back.
Very nice.
So, you know, I'm rolling in it, because I'm unbelievable. But when the man comes to take the car away, because, you know, it's the first time I've ever done this, I don't think he quite understood the emotional moment. You know, I thought he might give me a minute with the car. You know, I thought he might say, do you just have a minute with the car? I'd sort of said my goodbyes to it. I'd sort of done all that, really. But I'd sort of made it clear to him that this was quite difficult, because I said, you know, I really don't want this car to go, but I'm afraid. And he's like, all right, mate, yep, just sign this paperwork. Yeah. No, hang on, mate. I really don't want this car to go. Can you not see? It's quite an emotional thing for me, this car.
No, mate, he's there to pick up the car. He's not there to hear your life story. He's got a job to do. He wants to crack on.
Like, have you got your V5 or whatever that fucking form is? Have you got that? I'm in tears now. I'm on the ground, holding on to the wheels of the car, and he's going, look, just fucking sign the car.
Now, did you keep anything to remind you of the car, like even a keychain from the key or something like that?
No, I didn't have anything like that. I mean, I've obviously kept the, I've obviously got the Haynes manual for the car, so I'll still keep that.
Why?
Well, because that's a little memory of the car, isn't it?
You're keeping a manual to a car you no longer own.
Yeah. I'm going to keep the little VW sort of leather binder with sort of some of my paperwork about the car in. I'm not going to throw that away. That I might eventually, but, you know, the old MOT pass certificates, keep those for a while. That's all part of the...
Dear God.
Well, it's all part of the memory of the car, isn't it?
You could just pick one thing. You don't need previous MOT certificates. They're no use to anyone.
I mean, I'm not going to look at them, in fairness. I'm never going to look back at the 2013 MOT certificate, am I?
Oh, yeah. To be honest. A golden year.
Yeah. Got through without any advisories that year.
Trev, I realised something through my scrolling through social media. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've got some, not many, but we do have some international American listeners.
Yes.
And it's come to my attention, they are new to the T-Alarm. I've seen so many videos, mainly on things like TikTok, of Americans who are sort of saying, oh, we've heard of this British thing that at a certain time during the day, an alarm goes off and they all have to stop what they're doing and have their tea. And I'm thinking, in 2025, how stupid. I mean, I don't like to, you know, use the, you know, offensive term or trope that Americans are stupid people, because largely they're not. But the idea that they could get this far through life and not know that the tea alarm is real and exists blows my mind.
Well, the tea alarm is something we're brought up with.
Yeah.
From a very young age. There's a song we learnt at school because the tea alarm is, of course, 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yep.
So there's a song we learnt at school. I don't know if you learned this song. At 3:30, we go home for tea.
I'm realising my earlier policy of sending home kids staggered from different times.
Yeah.
That would really... I didn't even consider the tea alarm. I'm going to have to scrap that plan altogether.
I know. That's a bad idea. So the tea alarm, obviously, the afternoon one's 3:30. Obviously, in the morning, it's 11 o'clock. There's always the 11s's tea alarm.
That's, in fact, I think where we get the expression 11s's from, isn't it?
I think that's where it comes from, that we all stop for tea at 11. And, of course, it's all inbuilt into all British technology, that the alarm is just built in. I mean, you can disable it if you want to.
Quite your own peril. You wouldn't want to miss it, would you?
Well, who wants to miss a tea break?
Exactly. And
Britain's built on tea breaks, mate.
I know that the Americans tend to be a little bit American-centric. Like, when they learn geography, they don't tend to learn, like, international geography. They tend to learn about America and all the different states. And they don't really venture much out of America.
They don't really have to. It's such a vast nation.
So I wonder if that's, because that seems to be true of their geographical knowledge. And I wonder if that's also true of maybe just world history and current events, that this has just passed them by. They're only just figuring it out now.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have thought maybe during the Boston Tea Party,
it might have cropped up.
Yeah, you'd have thought that was something that might have become part of the national discourse at the time.
Yeah. In fact, I'm astonished it wasn't mentioned.
I mean, I suppose it's why really the teas made has never taken off anywhere else. I've never seen the teas made anywhere else in the world apart from in Britain. I don't know if you can still buy a teas made, but in the 70s and 80s, the teas made was a thing, so you could wake up to your tea in the morning. I mean, that wasn't part of the official tea alarm, but it was your wake-up alarm that would come with a cup of tea.
Absolutely. And I know that I'm not snobby about much in life, but there is one thing I'm a little bit snobby about, and this, I don't really do tea bag tea.
I know you don't. You do proper tea with a whole teapot and everything.
There's tea leaves, there's a strainer. Me and Mrs. Ben, we do the whole shebang, and we do it properly. So I actually have to set a second tea alarm for about 5 minutes before the actual tea alarm goes off.
Right.
Because I need time to, get the strainer out, make sure it's clean, get the teapot scrubbed, get it all in a line, get the biscuits out, the good quality biscuits, none of your rich tea muck. And I have to get everything in a line. Then the alarm goes off, and then it's time. We're brewing. We're going.
When you have your cup of tea from the teapot, do you do the little pinky finger?
Of course. I'm not an animal.
But you talked earlier about you and Mrs. Ben buying each other mugs. And when I've come to your house and you've made me a very delicious cup of tea from the teapot, not a tea bag, and you can tell the difference.
You can.
But you've always served in a mug.
Oh, yes.
Do you have a proper tea set?
Well, we do. Obviously, I mean, as you know, every British household has to have a tea set somewhere.
I don't.
You don't?
I don't have a tea set.
Ooh. Now, are you sure you're not falling foul of the, the Tea Institute rules? I mean, I know they're in charge of, fucking hell, I've forgotten. The clocks have gone. I've got to check with you. Is that going to alter when the alarm goes off, or has that been taken care of?
Well, I think that's all taken care of because your clock and your phone.
The same way Apple take care of my iPhone changing. Good, because I can't afford to miss it, obviously. I think that they might also demand that every British household does have a good set in case the Queen comes round. We have to have the good china.
She's been dead a couple of years.
Well, I mean, it's an old rule, isn't it? I'm sure now it would be for the King. And we do have a Queen, by the way.
Oh, well, yes. I mean,
Camilla might pop round.
I never think of her as the Queen, though. Do you know what I mean? It's like she's not in the national mindset as the Queen. If you say the Queen, who do you think of?
I think of Her Majesty Elizabeth, yes.
Queen Elizabeth II, right?
Yes.
That's who you think of. You're not thinking of Camilla. She is quite rightly the Queen right now.
Yes,
right?
Before you get too on your high horse correcting me that the Queen's dead, we do have a Queen. So
we do have a Queen.
Thank you very much.
But I don't know whether I would need... Like, if the King came, I might think, shit, I haven't got a tea set. If the Queen came, Camilla, I think, well, you're not quite top dog, are you? I think you could have a mug.
I mean, yeah.
I'd probably give her the old dragon mug.
That's quite disrespectful.
That wouldn't be a hidden message.
No, I think that's quite rude. I think it's sort of one of the bylaws that all British people have to have a posh tea set in case a royal visit, but it's not really enforced by the Tea Institute because they're putting all of their focus on making sure the tea alarm is maintained and observed. So I think they realise that for the majority of English people, the king, the queen, royalty aren't likely to drop in. So they've sort of relaxed the lines on the necessity to have a posh tea set. Ours is in the loft, and frankly, it's gathering dust. But we've got it out of respect for the institution. But
yeah.
If you're coming around to my house, as much as I love you, my friend, you'll be getting a builder's mug. I'll let you have Alexander Usyk if you want.
Yeah, fair enough. I've got Phil.
I am Phil. Or you could have my Jack Carlson Democracy Manifest mug.
Oh, I'll have that. And obviously there's the, you know, when the time comes when we all get the 3-minute warning for the missile attack.
Yes.
Probably that will be followed by a final tea alarm that will bypass any protocol around timings of the tea because there's not going to be time for tea beyond the next 3 minutes. So there'll be the warning siren for the incoming nuclear missile, and that will be followed by the emergency tea alarm, which sometimes they have to test. You know, sometimes like on a Sunday, we get the emergency tea alarm.
Yeah.
And that throws you sometimes because, you know, it's sort of 1 o'clock and your phone will be flashing with the word tea. And you sort of, well, what's going on? And they, oh, it's the test for the emergency.
If you've ever had a little snooze in the afternoon, a little afternoon nap, and you wake up a little bit disorientated and your phone's saying tea alarm, it's the panic that goes through your chest. My God, man.
And it must be terrible for you because, you know, with the whole teapot and tea leaves thing, I mean, you're not going to have time to brew a decent cup of tea in the time between getting the warning of the missile and nuclear annihilation.
No, I mean, in that circumstance with the 3-minute warning, I mean, we've always got tea bags on standby.
Right.
Obviously, we're not barbarians.
For such an occasion, I suppose, you've got to have...
And also tradesmen as well. If we like the tradesmen, it's tea leaves. If we think they're doing us over, you can just be fobbed off with some cheap old tea bags. We're not furnishing you with the good quality gear if we think you're diddling us.
Can I just ask a question, just moving away from tea, just briefly?
Okay, I would like to come back to that because you made a very good point there. I'd like to come back to that. But yes,
I'm just interested in where you stand on the coffee front. If you have a tradesperson who doesn't want tea but wants coffee, do you have proper sort of coffee beans? Do you grind them? Or is it just instant?
Instant
coffee?
Shit, yes. Right. Me and Mrs. Ben do not drink coffee. We're British. We respect the institution. We are tea drinkers. Yes. But we do appreciate that now and again, we will have to have a tradesman or someone who doesn't observe the tea respect that we'll ask for a coffee. So we do have a jar of instant Kenko, which I'm guessing might be in the same realms of the age of that tin of fish you've got.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't last. I bet if you opened it now, unless it's brand new, if it's still got the foil over the top, you've still got the excitement of bursting the foil. I mean, that's a great moment for any coffee connoisseur is to break the seal on a new jar of coffee. But if you've already broken the seal, you've got a time limit on that coffee because eventually it sort of all solidifies and goes a very dark brown. And you can still just about get away with hacking it to get a cup or two out of it. But the problem is, if you're not a coffee drinker, you are not going to know the state of that coffee jar until someone asks for it. And then you're going to find yourself in a situation where you open the jar and it's all that. So it might even have gone a bit mouldy. He's like, I haven't got coffee to offer. And then what sort of great English host would you be?
Well, I'd suggest that they have a proper drink and pour them a cup of tea.
Well, not everyone likes tea.
Well, I mean, that doesn't... I'm sorry, if you don't like tea, that's incredibly unfortunate, but you still have to respect, as does every British citizen, the tea alarm.
Well, it's not a case of liking it or not. You don't have to have tea when the tea alarm goes off. I mean, most people will, of course, adhere to that sort of protocol, but it's not dictated by law that the tea must be taken.
Yeah, I mean, you are correct. It is enforced that a hot beverage must be consumed when the tea alarm goes off for those finickety, picky little people who apparently don't like tea, who, by the way, don't know what's good for them, these cretins. But fine, they can have a coffee. But you know what? If you're going to have a coffee after the tea alarm's gone off, yes, technically you're not breaking the law, but
we're going to judge you.
What about hot chocolate?
Child's drink. I mean, up to the age of four, possibly, but then you need to be weaned onto the tea.
Because the thing about the hot chocolate thing is if you're going to have that, you've then got to consider whether you're going to go all out and do the whole marshmallow and cream thing on the hot chocolate. You know, and again, if we're talking about the time between getting a warning about the end of the world and making your drink of choice to toast the end, because that's all you can do is toast the end of the world with whatever chosen beverage
yes.
you decide.
I mean, then, you are right. Because that's what I was going back to say, actually, was about the 3-minute warning. Mm. I haven't got time to be brewing tea, so it's unfortunately my final ever tea alarm drink is going to be tea bag shit, which yeah. isn't ideal, but I will still honour the traditions of the tea alarm. And then, I mean, if hopefully you're like I am, you're only in a family of two people, so that's just enough time to boil a quarter-filled kettle, just.
Yes.
The only problem is before you're eviscerated by the nuclear bomb, you're going to scald your esophagus unless you're adding a lot of milk.
Yes.
And one more thing, Trev, before I forget, for those Americans who haven't quite got to grips with it, thinking it's not a real thing, do the Brits really do this? My one message for you. Our United States listeners, we appreciate, but the most important thing you must never forget about the tea alarm is...
Well, there it is. There it is.
Shit.
time to get the kettle on.
Right, I'm on it.
Well, there we are. Kettle's on. So just time to give you some recommendations before we wrap up another Trev and Ben podcast.
Better make this quick, mate. It's brewing.
Well, I've got two things for you this week. One is another true crime documentary. This one's slightly different.
Okay.
It's on Netflix. It's called Con Mum.
Con Mum?
Con Mum.
Okay.
It's the story of a British chef who is sort of taken in by this woman, claiming to be his wealthy mother, until he learns that all isn't quite as it seems.
How did that happen?
Well, you've got to watch it, because I don't want to give too much away, but it's one of those it's one of those where you watch it, and because this woman is now 85 and doing the things she's doing, I don't know why you should be more shocked when it's a person who's older. I think you just always assume that a little old lady is not going to be doing the things she's doing.
I'm really curious by this now, because I'm trying to work out what on earth her motive was for doing this. Was it so someone would be taking care of her in her old age? Or, I mean, surely financial gain isn't... I mean, it could be an option, but...
Well, you need to... I mean, financial gain was a big part of it.
Okay.
But it's an amazing tale. You just feel for the guy and his wife who found themselves in the midst of all of this. The man in particular, it's quite a sad story, actually, but mind-blowing at the same time. The other thing I'm going to recommend... Now, I will try and put a link to this, because it's not the most easiest thing to find. A friend sent me this week. We talked about going to see this play in London last year, a friend and I, called The Last Laugh, right?
Okay.
And it's basically people playing Eric Morecambe, Bob Monkhouse and Tommy Cooper. And I'm not quite sure where the play goes, but I think it's about them sort of discussing life, their careers, that sort of thing. I'd read a review of the play. I thought, this looks really good. I just didn't get round to sorting tickets out and going to see it. So my friend, who we'd had this discussion about possibly going to see it with, sent me a link this week to a short film they made. Now, I don't know how much of this is in the play, but it's a 20-minute film on Vimeo.
Ooh, very newfangled of you, Trev.
I know. Called The Last Laugh, short film, and it is Bob Monkhouse, Eric Morecambe and Tommy Cooper in a dressing room discussing comedy and what it is to be funny. It is fucking amazing. I really now wish I'd got to see the play, because it's now finished, the play. If it ever comes back, I will go and watch it, because A, the performances are amazing. It's very funny, but it's incredibly moving, actually. And I think it's one of the best things I've seen in a very long time in terms of just a nice short film with amazing performances.
It's a shame that it was never recorded anywhere, because you'd have thought, if it's his last run and the play is going to be shelved or cancelled or whatever, why not just have someone film it and then stick it on YouTube?
I suspect it will come back, because it started off in Edinburgh and then it came to the West End, So I suspect it will go and maybe go to other places around the country and come back. So I don't think it's probably the end of it. I suspect it will come back. But I just think it's lovely they've made this short film. Just well worth watching. It's 20 minutes of your time and it's just brilliant.
Nice.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Bill on X and on Blue Sky. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.